Often a big question when interpreting plays from the past is how do they speak not only to our modern times, but how do they speak to other cultures, particularly non-European cultures? And, you know, the criticism that we bewail is that Shakespeare is often, taken off school curriculum because he's a dead white male playwright. And yet there's incredible things that the reexamination of these plays has to bring on other cultures and what other cultures bring to it. And our next production in the studio is called Death of a Chief. And it is an adaptation of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar by the Native Earth Performing Arts Theatre in Toronto. And Yvette Nolan, who's the artistic director, and Kennedy McKinnon, who's a fantastic teacher of Shakespeare and voice and text coach, who's worked all over the world, is particularly dedicated to having other cultural perspectives to inform our interpretations of Shakespeare. The argument being that a sort of togas and sandals production of Julius Caesar is done often, well preserved, in no danger of being pushed off the stage. And so the play can bear another look. And Yvette said, I thought a really astonishing thing, both funny and bitter, which when she read Julius Caesar, she said, oh, it's just about band politics. And that kind of gave birth to this idea. And the Native Earth Ensemble of eight actors have been working for several years, working from Shakespeare's text, but adding to the mix, what if all of these characters were First Nations? What if this were taking place today? How does that inform the play, and how does it inform their subject? And Julius Caesar is one of Shakespeare's most popular plays, and a very popular play in his time as well. I wanted to ask you, David, about starting from the source, because the words in the production are all Shakespeare's. So they've played with some of them. They've redistributed the roles a little bit, played with the structure and order, but it's Shakespeare's text seen through the filter of Canada's First Nations people. Shakespeare was doing that. Shakespeare, he was writing about, I think, and it might be in Caesar itself, there's references to the clock, the town clock, which never would have existed in in Caesar's time. So Shakespeare himself was looking at the cultures of antiquity through a distinctly Renaissance and London lens. What was it about this play and this story that captured the imagination of Shakespeare and his public?
Well, I think it's just one of those tremendous plays. It's one of those tremendous subjects that I think had really strong resonances for people in England. On all sorts of levels. I mean, people knew, even illiterate people knew that Julius Caesar had conquered Britain. So there's a sense of there's a connection there in terms of there's a historical connection. The Tower of London is rumored in the stories of London that it was built by Julius Caesar, even if you were a serving man or woman at Hampton Court, you would have seen the tapestries of Caesar and the death of Caesar. So there's the Caesar is all around, and I think that's part of the attraction for the story. It's just going to be popular, and people are going to be able to relate to it. But much more importantly than that, the actual themes are really very, very vibrant for this particular time. We spoke earlier in terms of the rivalry between the Cecils and Essex. And Essex in particular is accused of popularity, of seeking popularity, which is why he's associated with Henry Bolingbroke, the rebel against Richard II, who's also accused in Richard II of being a popular character. And actually Essex has the play performed, Richard II performed, before his attempted coup d'etat in London. Shakespeare's Julius Caesar is very similar. It's about the same sorts of issues, about, you know, who gets to define someone as a tyrant. Do you have the right to overthrow that tyrant? What gives you the right to do that? And if you do overthrow or murder a tyrant, are you doing it for personal reasons, just your own personal private reasons, or are you doing it for public good? And do we believe you when you claim you're doing it for public good? And then what are the consequences anyway? Do you end up even in a worse situation afterwards? Is it good for the state to get rid of a tyrant? Or in fact, are you creating a worse situation? And yeah, one of the anachronisms, what we call anachronisms as historians, where there's something from a contemporary period that's out of place in a past play. The perfect example, another one in the play, is when Antony is giving his famous speech, his oratory, on the death of Caesar.
France, Romans, countrymen, yeah, lend me your ears.
Yeah, lend me your ears. And he does it, the stage direction says, from a pulpit. Well, there are no pulpits in Roman times. But there is a very public pulpit outside St. Paul's Cathedral, where public debates take place and sermons on different topics and can move the audience to action. So I think Shakespeare is deliberately putting that speech in the middle of London in 1599 and saying to the audience, you know, this is us. We are in this situation. We could be, we're not in it, but we could be in it. Someone could kill our queen. Some people, Catholics, Jesuit priests that are trying to convert English Protestants back to Catholicism, are claiming she's a tyrant, and they're publishing books and saying she's a tyrant. There's been assassination plots regularly against her for most of her. So yeah. I mean, it's and now we have a. It looks like we might have a nobleman who's very agitated, and so. I think it's a very contemporary play in that sense, and so of course it works in. Well, Orson Welles said it in the late 1930s as a sort of film about fascism. I mean, as a play,
yeah.
You can set it in. It will work in many different scenarios, and I think that's doing exactly what Shakespeare did, and it's being more Shakespearean than Shakespeare was in a sense. If this is going to be a First Nations. Production, I think that's fascinating.
Yes, you know, you hear the criticism when Shakespeare is done in modern dress that, oh, why can't you just do it as Shakespeare intended? Well, he did his plays in modern dress.
Right.
So it's interesting that you observe it's very Shakespearean for Native Earth to take on this approach with the play. A curious thing about the play is called Julius Caesar, and Yvette and Kennedy and Native Earth, they've retitled it Death of a Chief.
Right.
Which kind of addresses one of the surprises, I guess, of the play, because Julius Caesar leads you to believe Caesar's going to be the main character.
Right.
And he's in fact not the main character. He's an important character to the play without question. But the main character is Brutus.
Mm-hmm.
And Brutus is one of the conspirators. There's a fantastic second act of that play. It all takes place at night in a garden at Brutus' house. And one by one, from his wife, who wants to know what is going on in his mind, to each of the conspirators meet to measure this question. And it poses it very articulately about what is for the public good, what is for private interest. What right do we have to act? What are the terms of where does violence come into play as justice? And I think these are terrifically important questions for our own age today when we examine questions like, the war in Iraq prompts this immediately.
I don't want to be silly about this, but I was thinking of the 24 episode if listeners are have been addicts of that program because they, is it all right for people within the American government to actually assassinate their president when they feel the president is making decisions that are not in the public good? It's that sort of theme. It's a very contemporary.
Yes. And we often forget when we talk about Elizabethan England and Shakespeare's time. Yes, it was this incredible flowering of language and culture and expansion and science, but there were also heads on London Bridge. It was a violent and very harsh, unforgiving political structure that existed.
Yeah, and very a lot of association between political disorder and fear of political disorder and the economic disorder and social disorder as well. In the 1590s have the worst harvest, almost the worst harvest of the entire century in the middle of those decades. And people are literally starving to death in the streets of London. And there's fears of social order. There's criticism, you know, there's new measures against Catholics. There's worries about vagabonds and new controls over them. I mean, it's quite a... it must have been a very frightening time. But the Queen does not have an heir. You don't really know what's going to happen when she dies. The books are being published all the time. Lots of censorship is going on. Incredible censorship is going on at the time over every history book that's published on the civil wars, the deposition of Richard II by Henry the Bolingbroke, et cetera, et cetera. It's, you know, people are reading this stuff, flocking to the plays that are all about death, assassination, political violence, mob rule. I mean, the play in some ways, Julius Caesar, is also about what is the mob. The mob's very fickle from the first scene where they're accused of having supported Pompey, and now they're supporting Caesar, who's just killed Pompey's sons, I think it is.
Yes.
And then later they turn again, and that poor... And where is the artist's role in this? Well, that poor sinner who happens to share the name with a conspirator, and the mob surrounds him and demands, interrogates him, and he says, I'm sinner, but I'm sinner the poet, not the conspirator. And they say, well, we'll tear you apart for your bad verses then, you know. The mob violence is something that Shakespeare, I think, makes very problematic. You know, popularity is a problem. Courting popularity is a big theme here. Is it the right thing to do? Because the popular voice is a fickle voice, as far as Shakespeare is concerned. Yeah. And so, yeah, he doesn't. It's in a sense, it is all about Brutus, isn't it? It's about, will Brutus do it, and then how does Brutus cope with it? Or, I mean, we used to think of it, I suppose, as Caesar's tragedy and then Caesar's revenge. That was the conventional way I learned at school, this play. And then I'd keep on reading it and not agreeing with that. It wasn't about Caesar at all. He just happened to be the bloke who got stabbed. You know, it's all about Brutus and will he or won't he, and how does he deal with it?
And for a conspiracy to overthrow a tyrant, what I find problematic when I've seen productions that suggest Caesar to be a sort of Mussolini or Hitler or totalitarian kind of ruler, is there's very little evidence in the play for his poor leadership.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so you have quite a political conundrum of, are they really doing the right thing? Is this really motivated by personal gain, or is it for the public good?
Yeah, it's not like Richard II, where you have a catalog of crimes and abuses of the system that he's done. You know, there's misrule in Richard II, which is very carefully built up by Shakespeare. And it's another similar issue. Do you have the right to overthrow a tyrant or not? But his tyranny is undoubted. Julius Caesar's tyranny, I mean, he's described as weak, really. That's about it. Weak and sick. I mean, that's...
And old, yeah.
And old, you know.
Yes.
What sort of crime is that? What sort of tyranny is that?
There's Harold Bloom mentions that part of the motivation and complexity for Brutus is that he might be an illegitimate offspring of Caesar.
Uh-huh.
And that it kind of echoes or hearkens to Hamlet of, you know, the true rightful heir who should have it, who doesn't have it. And it's perhaps, you know, a far-reaching kind of theory, but it does satisfy a lot of the questions around Brutus' motivation and his contention.
Right.
I find the scene when he learns of his wife's death so harrowing, because he has, you know, not unlike the Scottish king, he has no time to absorb or grieve the impact of her action because he's now committed to act.
Yeah.
And that's such a huge part of Shakespearean tragedy, is what is the implication and consequence of our action. And I think that's really, really relevant in a First Nations context and in terms of how we will pursue governance of First Nations societies in Canada today and in the near future.
It's going to be a very exciting production, I think.
I think so.